Welcome back to Steel and Naz, presented by Hedge Better. Tonight is Wednesday, August 20th, episode 194 here. Before we, get to our guest here, I'm going to throw out the sponsors. Law offices of Patrick J. Foley, located at 265 Willard Street, Quincy, Massachusetts. If you're looking for legal proper representation for first-time home buyers, look no further than our guy, Patrick J. Foley.
Your guy.
Also, Drifter's Kitchen and Bar at 1464 Hancock Street in the heart of Quincy Center, Massachusetts. If you're looking for, proper, date spot, pizza, salads, espresso martinis, they got it. Even some oysters over there, again, close to the football season. Looking forward to our first fall at Drifter's. It's going to be great stuff. It's going to be awesome.
Fucking right.
This is leading now into our Patriots preview with Boston Sports Journal's own Greg Bedard, a recurring guest. We had to go through the archives. It was back in the Mass Music Radio days. I think it was only like our sixth or seventh episode. He just happened to come on. I think it was during COVID. Greg, has really stepped up his game. I mean, he's covered the NFL for Sports Illustrated, Boston Globe, Milwaukee,
Journal, literally everything.
Palm Beach Post. He's on his Big Boys Tuesdays at 98.5 The Sports Hub. Also check him out on BSJ, Boston Sports Journal. He's got his own podcasts there. He's got Mike Giardi in his back pocket there, covering the Patriots, and he's got plenty of beat writers who have years of experience over the other, three or four Boston professional sports teams.
Oh yeah, little of everything.
I mean, he came on and he did what he does, talk about the game of football. If you love the game of football, if you want to know what's happening this season without, listening to Felger and Maz, I tried asking Lena a little bit different. I listened to him the other day on Felger and Maz just to get a take of what else can I ask that's not in that, interview. We talked about the Drake Mays of the world. Efton Chisholm's. How's Rutgers football going to play this year? What'd you think,
Steve? Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Such a great football mind. Knows fucking every play. He had to watch every fucking play the past like 2 years. Yeah. You could almost like hear it in his voice.
4-13. we were with him. We didn't, afterwards, I don't think we're going to do too much. As we're still in the summer seasons, there's baseball going around. We'll give a quick shout out to a couple softball teams. But after that, let's lo and behold here, interview with Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal. We're now joined by the founder of Boston Sports Journal, recurring guest. Last time we looked at it here, August 11, 2020, last time he was on the show, Greg Bedard, covering the New England Patriots here. Just how are we doing today? And it's looking like after 2-4-13 seasons that hopefully we're on the up and up here.
Yeah, things are good. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Of course, absolutely.
I appreciate it. I didn't realize it had been that long. It doesn't it doesn't seem that long. Right. You guys must have that kind of impression on people.
nice.
But I think it's been a couple lean years here for the Patriots, not only their fans, but also the media covering the team, especially as a guy who prides himself like watching the film and grading the film. When I'm on Felger and Maz, I think you can tell when I'm sort of irritated at watching bad football. And I'm hopeful that's going to change. And I think it will. I don't know how long it's going to take. But I think the combination of Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels, I think the franchise is in good hands going forward. I do expect them to make a big leap this year, with what they've done in the offseason, the free agency, the draft class, also the schedule. Is it going to be enough to get in the playoffs? I'm not sure, but I think they're going to be right there in December. We're going to have meaningful games. You guys will be able to, look at the other teams around the league and be like, all right, we need them to lose. We need to win this game. And I think that's really all you can ask for. And it's been a couple of years since we've been in that situation in New England. So I think people will be happy with that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last 2 years.
It's been so bad. I mean, there's just been so much buzz this offseason about, are they going to surprise people? A lot of people, to your point, saying that, this schedule is pretty light in terms of, you got the Raiders, Dolphins, Steelers, and Panthers to start the season off. What do you think is, the biggest challenge for them? Because I see, the offensive line, there's, still rookies to prove themselves. What do you think is the biggest challenge for this team going into the season?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think, certainly there's some things still to be worked out with the offensive line. I don't think center and left guard are quite settled yet. I think they're they're trying to get there. And like you said, I mean, you know, in this new age NFL, from the final preseason game to the beginning of the season, you basically have like 2.5 weeks or 2 weeks.
I mean,
it's a long time, and they can get a lot of work done. You know, I think when I look at this team, you know, certainly the offensive line, there are questions. I think they'll be okay. And like the combination between, you know, who they brought in, Doug Marrone and the two other offensive line coaches, which is like nobody really talks about it, but just like how bad some of the coaching, positional coaching, has been on this team in recent years. I mean, you know, whether it was Matt Patricia trying to be the offensive coordinator offensive line coach, and then they brought in Adrian Clem, and because of a health issue, he wasn't there for half the season. I mean, it's been a disaster.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For several years, you know, basically since McDaniels left to go to the Raiders. And so, yes, there's a lot of work to do there. I do have a lot of optimism. I think Will Campbell will be fine. Like, once they game plan and realize what they have to do, Josh McDaniels is great at game planning to, you know, sort of change the pitches that he calls, so that'll help Will Campbell out. You know, I think they'll figure things out on the interior. I think Owenu and Morgan Moses, if he's healthy, they'll be solid enough on the offensive line. So I'm not really worried about, I mean, to me, the big difference between the Patriots being a 7-win team and being like a 10-win team, to me, is Drake May. And I think a lot of Drake. I think his skill set is absolutely what you want in a franchise quarterback. I think he has the buildings of the intangibles that you want. And internally, they love Drake May. They think he has everything that you want. And I don't disagree with them. But we also have to remember, this is a 22-year-old kid who did not play a lot of football towards the end of his high school career, 2 years of college, half a year, basically, plus last
still
year in the
guy.
NFL.
Yeah.
Like, he has a lot to learn and to discover. So, you know, could he hit this year and, like, make a big leap and suddenly they're, like, almost like the Commanders of a year ago with Jaden Daniels? Yeah, it could happen. It's just hard for me to project that when there's just not a lot to go on. And he's underwhelmed in these two preseason games. He's been good in the joint practices, which is a great sign. But to me, whether the Patriots are just taking a step or taking a huge leap, it's going to be on Drake May.
Yeah, and at least he's learning, because, I mean, he was, you saw glimpses of it last year, and that was with probably the worst coaching staff in the entire NFL, you know what I mean? And especially here.
Do you read into anything? Like, I'm watching the Minnesota, you know, first quarter there, and, you know, it looked like he was a little overwhelmed, kind of sailing balls left and right. I know, you know, he's done really good in those joint practices, but do you read anything in that Vikings game last week?
I can tell you I wasn't happy with it. Yeah. I mean, I did not think he played well. He was actually my lowest rated Patriots player on offense in the game, and actually for the team. You know, I thought he had like 6 or 7 like major miscues on that try. I mean, even the first completion to Mac Hollins was not a good throw. And luckily,
two guys going deep.
Mac Hollins made a really good catch, and he's 6'4" and, you know, a big dude. What do I take from it? You know, I've covered a variety of different quarterbacks in this league and, you know, how they deal with things. I think what we know about Drake, and again, it's early, we're still learning about him. He's learning about himself. I think that he's a little overhyped coming out, maybe a little jittery. I covered Brett Favre in Green Bay, and even in his last season in Green Bay, he was like that. And Mike McCarthy had to build it into his game plan to be like, all right, I need to settle this guy down. You know, is Josh McDaniels going to call like a tight seam pass on the first possession of a game? You know, he might not, because Drake might sail it like he did to Pop Douglas. Yeah. And all of a sudden you have a turnover and now you're on the other side. So I think there's that. I also think that Drake, because he's been so good in the joint practices and he's really impressed me. Even in Minnesota, when, you know, at times things were tough with the pass rush and all that, and the amount that Brian Flores and the Vikings defense throw at a quarterback, you know, I was impressed with that. But I have the feeling that he's one of these guys who just naturally is like, well, in this preseason game, I know I'm going up against the backups. Like, is he really on point for that game, or a practice with the Patriots? We're in shells. We're going jog through speed. you know, am I really taking it all that seriously? We might have that sort of thing. Like we saw with Jimmy Garoppolo, was a terrible practice player, but he was good in the games.
Yeah, raising up to the
moment. So, I mean, I don't take a ton from it. I just think the big thing with Drake, and I understand how fans are like amped and they see the talent and he has that. And Josh McDaniels is going to use his legs a lot more than Alex Van Pelt did. And that's all going to be good. And it's going to help Drake May be better. But I think people need to realize that he's 22 years old. He hasn't played a lot of football. And guys develop at their own pace. I mean, Josh Allen in year two wasn't that great. I mean, a lot of us, including me, when they played the Bills, we were like, man, this guy sucks. He throws the ball all over the place. No, he's not accurate.
Picks a game because it was just got in it deep.
Even another guy like Sam Darnold, when he played for the Jets, I mean, he was as young as what Drake May is right now. And not that he's the best of the quarterbacks now, but he, you know, has grown with age, I feel like.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you told me Darnold would have a 14-2.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I think people just need to, especially early on in the season, because it is a new scheme, a new coordinator, and, you know, a lot of new weapons. Like, it's going to take them time to figure things out and what Drake's good at, what the receivers are good at, what this team can block and what they can't block. And so, you know, if they get off to a slow start, which I do think, you know, when the schedule came out, I was very optimistic. And because I have a lot of faith in this coaching staff. And, you know, I predicted them 11-6. And now after seeing them all summer, I'm now more like eight wins, nine wins. And, like, I think that Raiders game is a lot more of a challenge.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, I think that the Steelers now getting Rodgers early on in the season, if they're playing the Steelers in week 16, I might not care because they'll probably flame out by then. But those early season games are now, to me, a little bit more challenging than I anticipated.
Oh, great. Couldn't agree more. I mean, even the Carolina's a team on the way coming up. I mean, you look at Buffalo week 5, that'd be a tough one. So, you know, like coming out of the gate here with Vegas and then Miami on the road where you never have success in, to your point, I don't think it's easy as everyone thinks.
You know, it's going to be, I think the week 1 game is going to be a big litmus test. I mean, we know the Raiders certainly have, you know, some talent in terms of Genty at running back and, you know, the tight end, and they still have Jacoby Myers, and, you know, they have a new coaching staff as well. So these guys really, it's going to be hard for them. Like, I think the Patriots by, you know, a quarter middle of the season, like, I have the utmost confidence in Mike Vrabel and Josh McDaniels and Terrell Williams and Jeremy Springer, the special teams coordinator, in terms of, you know, once there's stuff on film, being able to game plan for these teams to give the Patriots the best chance to win a game. But like the Raiders week 1, like nobody, who knows what you're going to get? I mean, they might run the ball 40 times with Genty. You just don't know. And so I think that puts that game where if it was at the end of the season where I'm like, oh, well, you know, Genty's going off or whatever, the Patriots will shut down him and they'll shut down Brock Bowers, the tight end, and they'll make everybody else beat him. Like week 1, you just don't know. It's a humongous crapshoot. And I think, you know, the first 4 games might be a struggle, but people just have to stick with it because the coaches will.
Seen a lot of games in the teens. I feel like a low scoring type, gonna have to grind it out.
Helped us against the Bengals.
Yeah.
Bengals had no idea what we were going to do.
Week 1. Yeah, that's for sure. You know, back on Mike Vrabel too, just going into this season opposed to last with Gerard Mayo. Obviously there's a difference there, you know, with him being a former, you know, head coach. But what are you going to see out of, you know, Mike Vrabel's coaching style this year that you didn't see last year in Gerard Mayo?
Well, I think that, you know, number one, it's just the overall vision. And this goes back to even like, and I wrote a column at the time after Gerard's introductory press conference, and I was just like, I still have no idea what he wants in a football team. And that's no way to restart a franchise. And like, I think with Vrabel, we saw in the first preseason game, you know, what he talks about with like, you know, the finish and playing physical and being smart. You know, I just think like, you know, Vrabel's ability to coach these guys. And when you watch him in practice, like he goes around to different positions. Like just the other day, like he was working with Keon White off to the side in terms of like his pass rush, or I don't know, you know, either defending the run, whatever he's working on. But it was just him and Keon man to man. And, you know, Mike rolls up his sleeves and, you know, basically, especially last year after being with the Browns, being an offensive line consultant,
yeah,
he can literally coach any position on the field. And that's huge. I remember, you know, reading a book this offseason. Mike Silver wrote a book. I forget the name of it right now, but it's about Kyle Shanahan and sort of his coaching tree and Mike Shanahan and all that stuff. And I think it's the beginning of the book where Mike Shanahan heard, I think it was Bill Walsh speak, and Bill Walsh said, like, if you can't coach every position on your football team, you have no chance of being a good head coach. Mike Shanahan was like, man, I'm screwed.
Yeah,
and then he went to figure that out. And I think that Mike Vrabel can literally coach any position on the football team. And that's really good. And I see him connecting with the guys and, you know, this coaching staff all across the board. You could see, like, it's very rare on this team this year where you can look out and say, you know what, that guy's gotten worse or that guy's gotten worse. Last year, you could say it all over the place. You'd be like, this guy stinks. He's taking a step back. This year, everybody's taking a step forward. And when you do that, the players buy into the coach even more. And I think that belief in the coach, and when Vrabel says, this is how we're going to win the game if we just do X, Y, and Z, similar to Belichick when he was here, like, that's going to make a huge difference for the team.
Yeah, with some positivity, unlike Belichick, at least publicly, you see most.
Yeah, right. With, yeah, out there.
Receivers a little bit, right? Afton Chisholm had, you know, a go-to game last game. Stephon Diggs, we'll see if he's, you know, the number one receiver that we hope to be. But my thing on Afton Chisholm here, you know, I think he's subject to make the team. You know, not just making the team, but, you know, do you have a chance to be a real impact player this year?
Well, I think if he's going to make an impact this year, it's going to be because somebody got hurt in front of him. You know, because I think the guys to start the year that are going to play a lot are Hollins, Diggs, Pop Douglas, and then a combination of Booty and Kyle Williams. And, like, you know, if, you know, I think we can all gather that Afton Chisholm can really only flourish in one spot in this offense where other guys can do other things.
Yeah.
You know, he's more of in the Edelman and Amendola, Wes Welker big slot time. Type yeah. of thing. And right now I think that goes to DeMario Douglas, and also, you know, Steph Diggs is going to get, he's an inside receiver now. He's not much of an outside receiver. We haven't seen him there that much this year in practice. So, you know, I have been very impressed with Afton. I mean, his play strength, his ability to break tackles, like, that's sort of separating him between the normal sort of preseason flavor of the month and what looks like a very real NFL talent. I just think that he's more of a depth guy at this point. But yeah, I do think that if somebody should get hurt, then absolutely he can step in and do a good job.
Yeah, no, that Vikings game, it was one of his receptions, caught it on the five. You thought he was down, and then before you know it, he was in the end zone. So one of those big try-hard guys who's just trying to make the team. And a Patriots fan, you got to respect the hell out of that.
Absolutely.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Besides Will Campbell, are there any other rookies you think are going to have a major impact this year?
Well, you know, of course, Travion Henderson.
Yes.
And I think,
looks amazing.
I think if you look at this roster – and, you know, I was talking to, you know, an NFL front office guy the other day, and we were talking about the Patriots, and, you know, he's like, how many guys on this roster do you actually think are, like, top 10 in the league? I think he would say Christian Gonzalez is certainly in that range. Mm-hmm. Hunter Henry, you know, as far as tight ends, like, you know, healthy, and with Drake May and in this offense, like, the last time we saw him, like, really productive, you know, Hunter Henry can be top 10 in this league. You know, outside of that, I mean, there's some guys with potential like Barmore, but, you know, I think Travion Henderson, if you look at like sort of a pass back, you know, multifaceted offensive weapon, I think Henderson has the best chance on offense to really get there, to be a top 10 talent. I think he's special. I think he's a difference maker. I think he's the type of guy that Josh McDaniels will use as a matchup piece, you know, every week, depending on the game plan. So he's really good. Jared Wilson, the left guard / center. I think he's your future center. I think for now he's left guard. He started off camp really well, sort of went through a little bit of a lull. very impressed with the kid's smarts and toughness and his balance. And you know, so he's really good. I think he has a chance. You know, we'll see a couple of, you know, Braden Swinson, fifth round pick. I don't know how much of a chance he's going to get. An undrafted guy like Elijah Ponders in front of him, who's been very impressive. Craig Woodson, the safety, fourth round safety. He, you know, started off camp a little bit slow. They deferred to some of the veterans, whether it was Duggar or, you know, whoever. But for the last couple of weeks, he's been a starter. And, you know, I wouldn't expect him to light the world on fire, but he's very smart and tough.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he's gonna make a big impact there. And, you know, I think Kyle Williams is a guy who started off camp really hot, went through a lull, but his film's good. Like, he gets open. And, you know, whether it was Josh Dobbs or Ben Woolridge, they couldn't find them. You know, he had the best four targets, zero catches in the first preseason game that I've ever seen, because he was open yeah, like right? four times for touchdowns. So, you know, I'm hopeful that he can be sort of that X receiver, that deep threat to sort of open up the middle of the field for everybody else. And so I think they have a really good rookie class, from the draft picks to undrafted free agency, certainly a lot better than the year before, where we might only see Drake May as the only one left standing once final cuts come.
That would be big with Kyle Williams, because the Patriots haven't had really a go deep receiver in a long time. The Farmer, that I was just curious too, the Farmer guy from Florida State, is that defensive lineman? Has he shown any promise at all, or has he been tough?
You know, he's flashed at times. He's been all right in the preseason games. I was expecting a little bit more, but, you know, I think he's definitely sort of like, I wouldn't put him in my two deep as far as defensive tackle. You know, you have Williams and Barmore. You know, you have Tonga, who's been really good from the Cardinals, who they signed. Didn't know anything about him, but that guy's just been really good since he's been here.
And he's then, huge, right?
You know, Jeremiah Farms has been a kid for a couple of years who just, when he gets on the field, he produces. And, you know, he's not a draft pick or, you know, not that flashy, but he just does a really good job. So, you know, Farmer's going to be on the team. He's going to be another guy that it's going to take an injury for him to really show what he can do.
Yeah, and Pond has looked really good for an undrafted guy stepping up.
Yeah, big time.
Taking some good snaps there.
I would say, what would be, you know, going this season, you know, Patriots, right, what's your biggest hot take that you would place on this team going forward? Like, what's the biggest hot take in terms of a player record-wise, a coach making a big step, just any hot take that you got?
So I would say my hot take, and we touched on this, and I'll leave Drake May off to the side because we talked enough about him on Failure and Mass and earlier. You know, I think that a lot of Patriots fans just take it for granted that the defense is going to be top 10 in the league, and I'm not sure that's the case. You know, I really like the cornerbacks, but, you know, first of all, Christian Gonzalez hasn't been on the field. I'm sure he'll be out there week one. Carlton Davis, I liked his film a lot. I think he's really good. He misses about five games every season. You know, I know when Vrabel was introduced, he talked about, or, you know, when he introduced the free agency class, he talked about Carlton Davis. And he talked about cat coverage, like between Gonzalez and Davis, like, you take that cat, I'll take this cat. And, you know, he signaled that they were going to play a lot of match man-to-man. I mean, that might happen, and there's certainly time for that to happen and matchups for that to happen. But in practice, and Gonzalez hasn't been out there, but when Carlton Davis has been out there, like, he's just left outside cornerback. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't, like, in the joint practices against the Vikings, you would think, all right, maybe you might match up Carlton Davis with, like, Jordan Addison, since Justin Jefferson wasn't out there. That wasn't the case. If Jordan Addison came out in the slot, it was Marcus Jones. And, you know, Carlton Davis took some slappy on the outside that they weren't going to throw the ball to. You know, that could change. You would think that they would practice it a little bit. Maybe they will. I don't know. But, you know, I have questions about that, about whether they're going to, you know, play a ton of, like, you know, press man and match up with guys and eliminate the one and the two and make them do X, Y, and Z. Again, they might do that. You know, Christian Barmore and Milton Williams getting paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, how impactful are they really going to be? I think there's a question about that. I like Harold Landry. Keon White certainly flashes at times. But ever since, like, they went up against the Commanders in the joint practice, and Laremy Tunsil kind of stuffed them in a locker. He's been sort of like underwhelming since then. And so, but they have Ke'Lavon Chase on, who I think has been, he's probably had one of the best camps of anybody on the defense. So there's another option that they go to. I think they're average at linebacker. I like Spillane. He's good. He's good and solid. I don't really like anybody else. And God forbid Robert Spillane goes down. They're screwed at linebacker. I think at safety, they're just average. Mm-hmm. You know, how good are they going to be, especially if they're playing a rookie? So I think the defense has a lot to show me. And I think we're all banking on the defense being really good and keeping it in the teens and keeping this team close. And that might happen. But to this point, I can't tell you that I have a great confidence in that. I have some confidence, but I don't have great confidence that that's going to happen.
That's a fair point, though. Yeah. I would look at the linebacking core, you know, and safeties. You're an injury away from, you know, both positions to you're getting really thin at this point. And with, you know, Kyle Duggar looking at trades, getting cut, that even cuts it even thinner. So to your hot take, I mean, that could happen.
Definitely a few injuries away from bad news. Not deep at all.
I mean, that goes for the whole team. And that's my biggest worry on the whole team. And this is what you get when you whiff on a draft class from last year, when, you know, Belichick's personnel like fell in a toilet. I mean, there's only really so much you can do. And I like what they've done. I like the play. They basically copied what the Commanders did the year before. Yeah. You know, nobody really splashy, just a bunch of real solid guys. And, you know, that really worked for them. They went from 4 wins to 12 wins in the NFC Championship game. And, You know, I don't think they were great on defense. I saw them in the joint practices. I thought the Commanders like low-key stunk on defense. You know, and I don't think they're going to be very good on defense. But, you know, the quarterback and Cliff Kingsbury sort of combined. You know, of course, they have Terry McLaurin. The Patriots don't have a guy like that. Maybe Diggs can approach that. But those guys sort of made the Commanders better than they were. Now, that's why I mean about Drake May. Like, can Drake May do what Jaden Daniels did with Josh McDaniels? Can he do that for this team? He very well could. He certainly has the talent to do that. You know, whether he's doing, Jaden Daniels played like 6 years in college. Drake played like 2.
Yeah.
And that's my only question about, like, you know, I think if I had to guess, I would say Drake May is more like Josh Allen, who really hit in year 3, than Jaden Daniels, who hit in year 1, because Jaden Daniels had played so much major college football.
Almost 25 years old, I think, at this point, right?
Yeah.
To your point of, you know, talking about the Commanders, Terry McLaurin, I mean, we talked, hearing about all these guys holding out on different teams trade-wise. I think on the defensive side, I don't think they should really risk on, you know, talking about the guy from the Bengals at Hendrickson. And then
Micah Parsons.
Is there a guy like that? I mean, McLaurin seems like the fit, but I don't think he's going anywhere. Is anyone that you really see that, you know, could be a possible fit for the Patriots?
Yeah, I mean, I would be all in on Terry McLaurin, second, you know, pay him, because I think he's exactly what they're looking for. Like, the Patriots were ready to fork over a lot of money for Chris Godwin. Yeah. He just didn't want to leave Tampa, and he was coming off an injury. They were ready to offer him $30 million a year. That's because Chris Godwin is like, you're like one of the best pros around, and he fits exactly in their program. You know, sort of like Milton Williams. The Patriots don't really, nobody on the coaching staff knows Milton Williams, but he has a sterling reputation. And while Milton Williams worries me because he doesn't have a whole lot of pass rush moves at this point, you know, he's going to work his ass off and he's going to try his damnedest. And, you know, so, you know, McLaurin's like same way, where I just don't think the Commanders are going to make him available. They would be stupid to do to take him away. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but at this point, I'm not adding to the defense. They've spent enough money over there, you know, to add another guy in the defensive line. You know, like we said, they paid Barmore, they paid Milton Williams, they gave, you know, paid Harold Landry a little bit of money. They've invested plenty over there. To me, you know, and some people say, well, the Patriots, they have $60 million in cap space. Yeah, cap space is one thing. They've spent $320 million in cash on personnel this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot.
They're like 8th, 9th in the league in cash spending. So they've spent this year to bring the floor up. if there's any petty cash left over, and I don't know how much there is, I'm sure if there's a special guy, they would make the crafts would make a special circumstance for it. But I am more inclined to see how this season plays out. And, you know, if there's a major injury or there's a blatant shortcoming, say, on the offense, like, you know, at wide receiver, or if Hunter Henry goes down, if I'm the Patriots, I'm keeping my petty cash to more like the trade deadline to be like, all right, well, we're in this. We're, you know, 7-3 and we're contending for the AFC East. Like, let's go get this piece. Now that we know what we have, let's go get this piece that's going to make a difference down the stretch than just, you know, sort of say like, well, I'm not sure we have enough of receiver. We're not sure we have enough with that. Like, let's go do this. Like, no, I would rather be more targeted in what I add to this roster. So I'm just holding my water a little bit, seeing how it plays out, seeing how the coaches do, seeing how McDaniels does with May. And then if it looks like the Patriots are in it and they're a player short, then go put your assets out there for that.
Yeah. Plug an actual hole. You know, like something that's there.
Yeah, that's it. No, because I just think of the MLB trade up deadline, how they did nothing. I won't go on the Red Sox here, but it'd be interesting to see if you get used to your point of if they have a good record and their situation, and see if, you know, if Stephon Diggs isn't having the year we hope he kind of has, you know, to that front, or if, you know, Drake May's not really having a lot of time, you know, getting the ball out, take a look at the offensive line, see what happens there. I will say, just to the point of, you know, even talking about this, it's just great to talk about, you know, some positivity and possible success for this organization coming this season, because we haven't seen a lot of it.
Nothing. You know, no, it's been really God, tough. No. Yeah. It's been a rough couple years.
Let me spin to a couple questions outside of, you know, this year's team. I have my PJF question of the day. Better corner of all time, Darrell Revis or Ty Law? This came up a couple weeks ago, and I don't know. There's a specific line of just like someone had, you know, a good 2-3 year gap there, and someone had a lot of, you know, whole career of accolades. I'd just like to get your take on it.
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, Revis, I only covered that 1 year when he was here. I did not cover Ty Law, of course. You know, I was covering, I think, the Dolphins at the Dolphins, time. And so, you know, I saw him from afar. You know, there's no question that Darrell Revis is one of the best corners of all time. But in terms of, you know, I would say I'm going to narrow it down to like their Patriots career. And of course, Darrell was only 1 year. Yeah. But I mean, I just think the world of Ty Law and his toughness and his length. And, you know, Darrell certainly, the rules changed because of the Patriots and Ty Law against the Colts and Bill Polian and all that. Revis was a cornerback for that time. But in terms of like an old school, you know, old NFL cornerback, like in his competitiveness, you know, I'll take Ty Law, you know, barely. I mean,
it's right there.
They're both
right
Hall of Famers.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
I think the argument is easier. Like, who had the better, you know, 1-2 year when it was Revis Island? I think you could give it on his part. Yeah. But, I mean, you're talking about 3 Super Bowl rings. You had a pick 6 in the Super Bowl. They had all these all pro, you know, Pro Bowls with the Patriots. I'd go with Ty Law all time, but I think there's just different, you know, circumstances for both guys. I mean, what do you think, Steele?
Yeah. I think like Revis, like 2009, like that's probably the best year, like individually of either of them. But
that Revis Island was career, crazy.
Yeah, Ty Law.
For sure. You had a question about college football, right?
Oh, yeah. What are we thinking about Rutgers football this year?
Interesting. Could it be our year? Because I'm about to ship my son off to the banks of the O'Rare 10 next week. He's the next in line.
Let's go.
So I'll be watching more closely. You know, good question. I'm not expecting much. I have a lot of respect for Shiano. The schedule is much tougher this year because last year they got away with, I don't think they played Ohio State, Penn State, and there was another big, maybe Michigan, that they didn't have to play last year. This year they have to play them. So Rutgers could be a lot better, and their record could be worse. You know, I like the quarterback. He gives them a chance. I think, you know, Kalia McManus is like their best quarterback since like Mike Teal. And I wasn't a big Mike Teal fan back in the mid 90s when, you know, they were doing stuff with the McCourties and Ray Rice and all that stuff. But, you know, I think he gives them a chance. I just, it's going to be tough for them to make a bowl. I'm hopeful for it. But yeah, I'm not overly optimistic.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. I think it's Ohio State, Penn State to end the season. That's rough.
I forgot they're in the Big Ten. Like that's a
no. Yeah, they play teams.
Major
yeah.
difference. Another
but good luck.
Yeah, off the balance. Is it a pleasure to go on Felger and Maz when you know you get your Big Boy Tuesday there? Are you kind of sick of their shit?
It's a great question. Yeah. It is a pleasure. I mean, look, no matter what happens on that show, I mean, it's a humongous platform.
A big time.
And it's done a lot for me and BSJ, you know, in my family. And, you know, a lot more people know me from that. And, you know, when I'm out and about, and I'm not out and about much, but, you know, when I am, I always come across people or, you know, say hi, which is great. And so if you see me out and about, you know, please say hi.
For sure.
You know, it definitely gets challenging at times. I will say that. I think everybody realizes when I've kind of had enough of their crap, you know, especially Felger, you know, and there are days. I remember I made this analogy, I was coaching a lot of softball and like club softball and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't know what I'm more mentally tired from, coaching a 2-hour softball game or being on 2 hours with Felger and Maz. Like, it's pretty close.
Yeah. It's left and right.
But,
there.
You know, it's for the most part, it's fine. I mean, I try to impress upon these guys, and not that they listen to me and they don't, you know, their bank accounts are much larger and, you know, a lot of people pay more attention. Like, I just wish, because they just have such a platform in this market, I just at times I wish they would. And look, they're both journalists at heart. They're both where I was. I mean, Mike covered the Patriots for like 10 years. And, you know, I think him not coming out to practice, and I always bust their chops about this and they don't like it. But, you know, I'm like, why don't you guys come down to practice? Because, like, I would love to hear Felger watch a practice and be like, you know, because he covered Brady, covered Belichick. Like, I don't know. What's he think about Vrabel? What's he think about Drake May? Like, you know, don't just go off our reports and, you know, just because it's easy. Like, you know, come down and, and watch and
check and, it out.
Get their own, make your own judgments.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think people would get a lot out of that, and it'd be a little bit more journalistically. You know, responsible. I think sometimes they play the hits and, you know, but look, they're in the entertainment business. They entertain the hell out of everybody, including me. And so obviously they're doing the right things.
That's a good point of trying to get them down to practice to see the actual thing rather than take someone else's, you know, report.
Yeah, right.
Like you said, they have a long, you know, resume history of covering sports, but we're in today's age now and not back in the day. What else did I have here? A couple more questions. Let's see. I said Felger and Maz. Super Bowl prediction. Like, so, you know, the Chiefs and the Eagles are the coming off the last Super Bowl. There's a lot of teams, you know, for the taking this year. Everyone's saying kind of the Chiefs, you know, this is kind of a year where they could, you know, not reach it this year. You know, there's other teams in the NFC that could give the Eagles some problems. Do you see the rematch? Is it going to be a trilogy or is it going to be someone else?
So I wish I had a really good opinion on this. I don't, because we're like, when I'm in the NFL in the season, training camp and all that stuff, like I don't see anything that else is going on. Like, it's just enough for me to concentrate on the Patriots. You know, I'm definitely intrigued by the Ravens and the Bills in the AFC. Like, I think this might be the Ravens' time. I think you could also argue this could be the Bills' time. I have a little bit more confidence, I think, in the Ravens, because, you know, Lamar is so dangerous and he seems to take another step in terms of, you know, what he does as a quarterback every year. If I had to lean right now, I would say the Ravens, and I don't think anybody else is close to the Eagles. It would take a catastrophic injury. I mean, I just think Howie Roseman has done such a good job with that roster and just building it and having people ready. Like, you know, for instance, they let Milton Williams go this year. And I remember watching Milton Williams film. And then there was this other defensive tackle that came in after Milton Williams. I was like, that guy might be better than Milton Williams. Yeah. And
so, Jalen Carter, is it someone? Is he on the end? I'm trying to remember.
No, Jalen Carter. Okay, it was some other kid. I didn't know his name. Oh, I had to look him up. I was like, who the hell is this kid? Because he's pretty good. But he's going to be the new Milton Williams. And so Howie's just done such a good job of keeping that wired. Like, I think as of right now, I'm going Ravens, Eagles, but the Bills are very close for me in the AFC.
I'd like to see, as long as, you know, the Patriots aren't in the AFC, you know, East first place discussion, I would like to see the Bills eventually get there. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I think the Ravens probably have a better defense, and you never know in these tight games. It's always, you know, who has the ball last, and if Pat Mahomes gets home field advantage, that's a whole different predicament.
Yeah, you definitely can't just count out the Chiefs yet.
No, definitely not.
Call them out.
What else did I have? Do you have anything else? What do you got? Nothing. Greg, really appreciate you coming on the show. Best of luck with everything going forward. And definitely going to be tuning into Boston Sports Journal.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys. And let's not let it be 5 years again. Let's do this again next year.
Love that. Appreciate you.
Yep. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. And we're back. That was Greg Bedard of the Boston Sports Journal. Covering the New England Patriots. I call that Big Men Wednesdays because we're recording here on a Wednesday. A little pun. Not, like Zolak said, not Felger Man's. Stealing Man's, right?
Got it. Nailed it.
We didn't call him out. Anton wasn't here, and Steele called him out for the Gronk bust coming out of 2010 take. But, you know, you heard it. You know, Drake May, he's the key, and, you know, between winning 7 and 11 games this year, Mike Vrabel can really take a step forward. I mean, if you want to recap, listen to it again. But, you know, we asked him kind of here and there, and it was great having Greg back on the program.
Absolutely. Love to see it. The going from 11 to like 8 or 9. You hate to hear that from someone who's so close.
Yeah.
But it happens. I mean, it's not like they're going to blow the doors off anyway. You know what I mean?
Even like there's like football beat writers that just, you know, pay attention to the game, the scoring, the, you know, this player has this many. There's not really a lot of guys that come around like a Greg Bedard, attention to detail. I mean, when he's explaining something about, you know, whether you're talking about a rookie guard or you're talking about even that when he brought up there's another guy taking over Milton Williams' spot for the Eagles. Just attention to detail. That's the things I kind of look at. I think that's what separates him from a lot of different, you know, not broadcasters, but journalists from around the area.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if there's a better one with, like, linemen and stuff.
No, it's
like, I don't know if there's literally a better
talk about student of the game. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, call it for what it is. Maybe I'm kind of riding the guy, but I'm just giving credit where credit's due.
And we probably got our only 1990s Rockets reference that will ever occur on this show.
Yeah, shout out to his kid. I think his kids go into Rutgers. Shout out.
Absolutely,
should be good. Hopefully, the Big Ten treats them better than we think. Because, like you said, Penn State, Ohio State, there at the end.
I think it's at Ohio State, then Penn State at home.
Oh boy, that's could be tough for Rutgers.
Gotta win those six early to get in that bowl game.
They even had like two top five picks this year in the NBA draft, and they still didn't make the tournament. Like that's gotta be like tough.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were like supposed to be really good for basketball. Yeah.
Awful. Shout out Greg. Hopefully that goes better for your alumni. We have really to talk about right now is a big 4-game series going into Yankee Stadium on Thursday. We're recording on a Wednesday. Who knows when this comes out? Producer Justin's the best. But the Red Sox, after losing 3 straight, 1 to Miami and 2 to the Orioles, when they left, I think, 13 guys on base last night. I mean, this team just...
It's not how you win games.
It's not how you win games. I think they have the right pieces together, but their, like, 20 through 25th guy has been terrible for this team. And I'm talking, we got Greg Weissert, who has been terrible. Who was the guy, Isaiah Campbell, the other day that made Chapman come in during a 5-run game? It's just guys who shouldn't be in the league anymore. And I don't know if that's due to injuries. I mean, even you had Nathaniel Lowe come through last night with a 2-run bomb to tie the game up in the 9th inning. It's a guy you picked up off waivers.
Yeah.
And you still can't get it done. Connor Wong, I knew with more bats that he will be the player that we think he'll be. I mean, I think he was batting under 50, like legit 0.50 He's got some at bats. He's getting close to 200 now. I think that's good with Narvaez not as healthy as he's been in the past. Sadan Rafaela, I'm up and down with him. He's going to have his highs of highs. He's going to have his lows of lows. And you could make a story, pun on words there, that Trevor Story has been the best player on this team this season. I don't think that's too far-fetched. I mean, this guy's got 20 homers, 80 RBIs. He seems to come up time and time again. Didn't last night, but it's 162-game season. Not everyone's going to come up big in, you know, the biggest spots. But he's been, you know, a key component for this team. Jaron Duran getting in it with the fans again last night. I think he called, I mean, we can swear on this program. I'm not going to say the other thing he said last year, but he did call a fan a fucking pussy. That's what he said last night.
Yeah, fucking love that, dude.
I kind of love it. I mean, you can get mad and, oh, as long as he's not saying like homophobic slurs or God forbid any racial stuff, like I'm on board with it. You're pissed after you strike out. Let it be known.
Dude, if I struck out and like 18,000 people told me I sucked, like I would tell somebody to shut the fuck up too. Like, you know what I mean, dude? Like that, and like I wanted to say that striking out in like fucking Little League, dude. No. Like I couldn't imagine Fenway Park.
You know what I mean?
And having a bunch of drug assholes just yell at you, dude. Like shut the like,
you know how many dads I told to fuck off when I was younger after I struck out in Little League? Come on, dude. Let's get real.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Real. Like, come on. You just can't hit them, and you can't do like fucking, like you said, like stuff like that.
Yeah, and to the point of back of the Red Sox lineup, something. Roman Anthony's been great. If it hasn't been for the Coons or whatever guy on the A's, he'd probably be the AL Rookie of the Year. Bregman's doing what he can, you know, being healthy-wise. I just don't see a lot of promise going forward if they do get in the postseason play of, you know, a three-game, five-game series. If you don't win Crochet Day, you're screwed. And I think that's just been the tall tale all season. They didn't do what they were supposed to do at the deadline, which is get more starting pitching. You couldn't get Joe Ryan. They just weren't giving him up. But when your big acquisitions are Steve Matz and who's Jordan Hicks, who's – I think I have a lower ERA than I haven't even pitched yet.
Yeah, I don't know why why teams decide, because he was like a decent reliever.
Yeah,
and then they moved him to starter, and like it's clearly just like not what should be done.
Well, his problem is he doesn't throw strikes, gets behind the count, and then he throws a 99-mile-an-hour fastball right down the middle. Me or you, we're not hitting that.
No.
But if there's, like, I don't know, Gunnar Henderson, if he hops in the batter's box in the ninth inning, you throw him a 3-1 fastball down the plate, that thing's going over the monster. That thing's going over the fence. It's not really an argument.
And also when he was a reliever, part of why he was good is because he went all out because he wasn't pitching innings. So he was hitting like 105, like consistently.
Wow.
Like he was throwing out.
I remember that he was.
Yeah, he could hit like I think he might have hit 106. And it like, was, he like was touching like early Chapman numbers.
That was him on the Cardinals, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then they moved him to starter, and he starts throwing 99 now, and fucking...
That's insane.
It's crazy that like you suck now that you throw 99. But yeah.
So as it sits now, the standings are looking like this.
Hold on. Yep. Wait for this. Say it.
Oh, the Yankees are ahead. The Blue Jays are leading. Yankees are in second, 4.5 games back. We follow down 5.5 games. Come the wild card. Yankees possess the first wild card. A game again above the Red Sox, followed by the Mariners, where all three of them are pretty much neck and neck. And then you have the Royals with two, Guardians of three. I mean, the Royals have won 5 in a row, eight of their last 10. Could see them getting back in the race, but this leads us back to, you know, a big matchup in Yankee Stadium this weekend, where if they do split, it's kind of win for both teams. If one team sweeps the other, kind of smokes them.
Yeah, it changes a lot.
Now, what do you think is a key factor for the Yankees going this series?
Well, the bats. The bats are fucking hot for the Yankees. They tied the club record last night with 9 home runs.
Oh, wow.
And a 4-game win streak, so they just got to keep that going. Judge is back. He hit his 40th. He's not playing in the field.
As he should. That's actually a good call.
That's
a good call.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's still batting 333, 92 ribbies. If I'm a Red Sox fan and I'm hoping a Yankees killer doesn't come my way and his name's not Aaron Judge, who's he going to be?
Stan's red hot.
Okay.
And when Stan gets hot, he's still one of the most dangerous. The only issue with him is there's also ice cold Stanton.
Oh yeah.
But when he's red hot,
Stanton,
he's still one of the scariest hitters in the game, no doubt.
So the pitching matchups as follows. So it goes Giolito, who's been probably our second best guy this year, against Gil. It's Gil, right?
Hill.
Okay. Pronunciation's tough. And then Bayo, Max Fried, Crochet, Warren. That's Saturday. And then Sunday Night Baseball is Dustin May against, is it Carlos Rodon?
Yes.
So that should, May has thrown two straight good starts. Obviously, you have a Crochet there. But those first two matchups, I mean, if you just look at pitching alone, those are a coin flip. Those could go anyway.
Max Fried all day.
Max Fried
all
day.
That one's not close.
Bayo has pitched pretty well.
Max Fried's like dead, like
Cy Young.
Yeah, like no.
Behind our guy in Scooble.
Yeah, he's pretty much. Third. He's up there. Okay. Yeah. And I'll hand you Crochet over Will Warren.
Yeah. Hand you. So 13-3 game yesterday. I'm just more curious as a Red Sox fan. Look, so Trent Grisham was leading off. You had Judge, Bellinger, and Stanton. And then Ben Rice, who I feel has been playing good baseball.
Yep.
Paul Goldschmidt, batting like sixth or seventh. Decent year for a 40-year-old.
No, yeah, it's still having a good year. He was on fire for the beginning of the year.
And then Jazzy Volpe, who has been a disappointment. I don't care.
Yes.
Who you're going to agree with, but I think he's a career 220 hitter for the Yankees. Plays pretty good defense, but.
Solid, but not good.
So, I mean, the bottom line with the Red Sox is, don't get me wrong, they're starting pitching and stunk, but nothing has been worse than their bullpen the last, call it 20 days. There just seems to be, if Chapman's not available, this team's screwed. Chapman, like, if you go back statistically, I bet this is his best year like he's ever had. He's been lights out. He came in last night, and I get it's the Orioles, but, like, every guy that came out of the bullpen, Walker Buehler, who's been a disappointment this season, couldn't even go five innings, so they've had a reliever in since then, and every single guy had trouble every inning. He comes in, I think he had a quick 11-pitch, 3-strikeout inning, so that's just the way that guy rolls.
I can't believe how much of a disappointment for you guys Walker Buehler has been.
Yeah.
Not that I thought he would get back to, like, his, like, peak form where he was, like, arguably the ace of the fucking Dodgers, but, like, he's been fucking terrible.
Yeah,
like, not just a disappointment. Like, his ERA is, like, in the sixes.
He just doesn't have good stuff anymore. Like, his fastball is flat, and he was able to get away with these off-speed, sliders, different pitches. But now he can't because he's got to mix it up first time around the order. So by the second time, these guys are... I'd be surprised if it makes him another start, dude.
Yeah, no, I mean, you shouldn't pitch for the team, like, level bad, not just, like, not Cy Young worthy.
They got May for a reason. Dustin May there.
Yeah.
Who will probably be their fifth starter after, you'd say Crochet, Giolito, Bayo. I mean, you have Dick Fitz coming up from AAA probably, and I'm forgetting someone else there, but they're all pretty good.
No, and May's one of those guys that has the stuff when he's on. He's just not always on.
Nah, big time.
But when he is, I mean, that stuff's electric. Like, he has some of the best movement for pitchers living in the
league. I'm hoping he pitches this weekend. Justin Slayton coming off the 60-day DL could be the potential setup man going forward.
Don't even know who that is.
Jordan, he's pretty good. Came through the Red Sox organization. Jordan Hicks, Ben Ascheeks, we mentioned that. I'm going down the list here. Garrett Whitlock has probably been their second best pitcher in the bullpen. Steve Matz only pitches well when he doesn't have to, get in a big game. Justin Wilson is, every time he's come in the last five appearances, has been dreadful. I'm just hoping better for this bullpen because I think their lineup, they have it lineup wise to make some noise, but I think their pitching isn't going to get them too far. If they make the playoffs, I'd be surprised if they get by the wild card round.
Yeah, it's possible. Yeah. I mean, the wild card, Seattle. Not particularly scary.
No.
Although I saw, like, if it ended today, you'd have Seattle. The Yankees would have the Tigers.
Yeah,
well, they beat last year, so.
Well, that's the thing with that. Thing with this wild card stuff is a team like the Red Sox, who are 37-25 at home, you need that top. If you get that top wild card spot, all three games are in your house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, so it goes, the bottom division team is the one seed, and then the two is a two, and then three and four are on the road, and they don't switch, which I do like. You stay there. If you have to play a three game series and just say the Red Sox are playing like the Angels or something.
Yeah,
they have to go back. That makes no sense in a three game series,
especially when you play series all year. If it was a different sport, that would be kind of like fucked up.
But you're doing the same thing.
That's literally just another series of baseball. Like, it's the same fucking thing.
But the Yankees are under 500. Basically, you want to be the home team no matter what. Yes. Makes more of an excuse if you're the Red Sox. Actually, I was looking at the Yankees here because I'm saved probably under your cursor because it's a Yankees favorite. 41-25, so that's even better. More games at home.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, as we've both stated to each other on this, we both have fucking Mickey Mouse-ass fields and home field advantage.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. And not to like...
Fuck all of
not
you.
Not to like go jinx Yankees. It all, but if the Yankees sweep at home this weekend, they have the same exact record at home than the Boston Red Sox do. So that's something you're playing for. You've won four in a row. We've lost three in a row. Only time till it switches. Does it happen tomorrow? Starting Thursday? I don't know. We'll see. I'm just kind of pissed that the Blue Jays are kind of running away with it, though.
Yeah, but they're calming down a bit.
Yeah, but they still five games, basically.
Yeah.
See how it goes.
There's a whole fucking month left, man.
Anton's too afraid to show himself in the studio. 12 games back. Not looking good.
They're puking on themselves pretty hard, yeah.
Best team in baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers. Great to see. Now, I was also, before I close up baseball here, I was seeing that Rob Manfred spread this idea that they were going to switch to the divisions, like, geographically.
Yeah.
So it was going to be like an Eastern Conference and Western Conference. So the Eastern Conference, the East Division in the conference, it would be the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Mets, and the Phillies. Do we like that?
That's honestly like just pure hatred. I think that would honestly be kind of sick. Much more for the Yankees and Mets, because like the Red Sox just keep the Yankees, but the Red Sox don't really have anything with the Mets and Phillies.
And it's Toronto too. Toronto's the 15. But
okay, yeah, so...
My take on it was, as a Red Sox fan, I would fucking love it. You know why? The Mets, the Yankees, the Phillies in Toronto, they're all in the top five of spending in the sport of baseball. If you have to get in division and play those teams more than you have to play other teams, what's gonna do to John Henry and the Boston Red Sox? It's gonna have to make them spend money. And you know what? I want to see that.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that would make that suck is, you do switch out two punching bags for two like solid teams.
No, and I
you know what I mean? Like, dude, like from a standpoint of wins, like you kind of want like, oh, well, at least we have this four game set with the fucking Orioles to fucking,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, get back on track.
But I think that's what would be the crazy part, because you would probably see a division with the Orioles, like the Nationals, the Miami Marlins. You like, just think about the Southeast. That's horrible Major League Baseball down there. Horrible.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The Rays.
The only one that like wouldn't change would be the like NL West.
Yeah.
That like straight up is the NL West. The NL West. That was like geographically made.
They had like Pacific and like Northwest. So like they were like going to throw in a new, because it's all about expansion. They were going to throw in like a Salt Lake City team, and then they were going to throw in a team from Nashville, which I'm all for. Bring the MLB the Nashville now.
Yeah. And I mean, fucking also like Manfred, you're expanding. It's like no one's stepped foot in Cincinnati Stadium in like fucking 15 years, dude. You want to expand, you should work out what you got with, dude. No.
But that would make the higher teams want to spend it to the higher, you know. I think that would be bad for, it'd be good for Red Sox fans. That would be terrible for baseball, because there's going to be some divisions that just, there's four or five fucking teams that have, you know, low teams that don't spend money, and they're just going to be okay with that because they're in the same division as other teams who don't spend.
Yeah.
So there's a catch 22 with that. On that note, you got anything else? I think I'm going to close this up.
Yeah. No.
Want to give a quick shout out to the sponsors here. Law offices of Patrick J. Foley, located at 265 Willard Street, Quincy, Massachusetts. If you're looking for legal, proper representation for first time home buyers or just anything in general, this guy is a man on a mission. He's got a team. What you got? What you got?
Hey, Rags.
Hey, Rags. I was going to throw that in there.
Sorry.
Championship Sunday. The boys came to play. Won for the first time in 10 years. Documentary's coming out soon. Rags Tavern Softball. Got the job done. Won in game three. Had a good DB.
Hey, Rags.
Had to do three games. A lot of their players missed the championship due to the Flavin tournament in Dorchester. But that's for another time. That's something we just ignore. Tough shit.
fight through adversity.
Yeah, brought the trophy's still got to be at Rags over there. I had a great time. What else? I don't know. Won the championship. Try to do it again next year.
Hey, Rags.
Mike Nelson, Mike Golden, the captains, what you call it, both away on vacation.
See, that's fighting through adversity.
They've played 10 years on this team. Haven't won. And then the weekend they go on vacation, we won.
Can't write that.
Yeah, but maybe I'll see them in a couple weeks at our other sponsor, Drifters Kitchen and Bar, located at 1464 Hancock Street in the heart of Quincy Center. If you're looking for, you know, some oysters, pizza, some nice domestic giraffes, they got it there. And come football season, they're going to be coming with a lot more. Follow them on the Instagram pages, Facebook pages. Always coming, cooking out with something real. Loving that. I also want to give one big more shout out to the Boston Sports Journal's Greg Bedard for coming on the program.
Yes.
What a guy. Founder. Greg. Covering the New England Patriots. Big Men Wednesdays. That's how we get it done. Episode 194 in the books. I'm still counting. I think we have like six more, dude. Six more and we're at 200. That's what I was talking with producer Justin today. Hoping to get that in, you know, this fall.
Let's get it.
We'll find out where the party is. Maybe Rags.
Hey, Rags.